walk around the parish will reveal a mass of minor information which ought to be recorded in any history of the parish. Starting at the Wilburton parish boundary on the north side of the main road is a short roadway giving access to Hinton Hall Farm and to a public footpath which leads in a westward direction to the Hot Row entrance to Hinton Hall. Continuing towards Haddenham on the north side of the road is a strange looking dwelling which Mr. Frank Steele used as a home for several years. On the closure of Haddenham railway station, Mr. Steele learned that the signal box was for sale for £10. Walking into the station master's office, he purchased the structure and had it moved to a garden which he owned. This area of the parish from Wilburton boundary to the old signal box is peopled with Wilburton folk, who for social and general purposes gravitate towards Wilburton village, but as they are on the Haddenham Register of Electors, they must at any election journey to Haddenham to record their votes. This has resulted in slight friction, and under a review of boundaries it is now almost certain that the area up to the signal box will be transferred to Wilburton. Proceeding towards Haddenham between Poplar Lodge and the next ivy-covered house will be seen a partly filled-in pit, which was in the 19th century the site of a tile-making factory. It is said that the house was a public house, but no record of a licensed house exists. It is possible a supply of beer was kept for the workers at the tile factory. Near the junction of New Road and Wilburton Road is the water tower, built on the site of an ancient pest house, which no doubt was a medieval isolation hospital. Before the site was levelled, there was a slight mound, and in this elevation were traces of brick piers, or supports, built of the soft red brick used in the 15th to the 19th centuries. It is possible that a wooden structure was supported on these piers and used as a pest house in time of need. Nearby is the modern Perry Close estate, built partly on a paddock purchased from the Camps family and partly on a strip taken from the parish recreation field. The mound on the recreation field is a very interesting survival. Local people suggest that it is a burial mound, but the experts who have studied the situation state that in their opinion it is a prospect mound from which watch could be kept for the medieval Hinton Hall. And standing as it does on the highest part of the parish, it would give a very clear view across the fens of any intruders who might be approaching if they were to harm the lord of the manor. Around the mound there was, before the recreation field was levelled, a deep ditch which made the mound seem so much higher. But when the recreation field was levelled, this ditch was filled in, and so the mound is not so imposing as it was some years ago. The block of two houses on Perry Close Estate, situated nearest the recreation field, are on the site of a small medieval mound, similar but not so large as the existing mound. Before the site was levelled for building, this smaller mound was excavated, but little of importance was found. A Nuremberg counter of the 17th century, a few nails, small pieces of glass, and a few animal bones and teeth, but no evidence that it was a burial mound, for the soil at ground level had not been disturbed. Recent excavation showed that the old Hinton Hall was extensive and reached to the road between the new hall and the adjoining field, now planted with fruit trees. The site of the manorial fish pond can be traced, but it has been drained, levelled and overplanted with fruit trees. The position of the avenue of trees indicates that the road to Wilburton originally followed the course of the existing footpath right of way. It was probably diverted to the higher ridge to its present course because of drainage problems, for several small springs emerge near the footpath. Near the present gateway to Hinton Hall is a large disused sandpit, which for many years was owned by the Feast family and was a source of supply of builder's sand. Part of the pit has been levelled and returned to cultivation. Proceeding along Hop Road towards the crossroads, we find on the left a small brick building called the Beer House. This was built to house the parish beer, which was in regular use at funerals until about 1940. This small building was no doubt erected on a waste strip of land and secured by squatters' rights, and although the beer has been sold, the building and site remains the undisputed property of the parish council. Crossing the road to the telephone kiosk, which is on the corner site formerly occupied by the Windmill Public House, we proceed along Station Road, passing the Three Kings Public House, which is still licensed, by the lodge built by Mr. A. E. Wright and now occupied by Dr. Wolfendale, and then on the left by Arkenstall Centre and the parish church. Opposite the gate to the church is the site of the demolished Red Lion Public House, and next is a house called the Filberts, so named after a magnificent narrow avenue of nut trees which formed a nut walk across the large garden. This feature of the garden has recently been cleared. Proceeding downhill, we have on our left Vine House, occupied for many years by the Porter family, who were, apart from being farmers and brickmakers, also brewers. The malt house and brewery were on the north boundary of the premises, where part of the boundary wall remains, but the building has been demolished and a modern bungalow erected on the site. Passing York House, where the Heifer family operated a cheese-making business, we come to the Limes on the right, a very old house, part of which could be 16th or 17th century. It was until recently surrounded by a nice garden, but this has now been sold for residential development. Proceeding towards Sutton, we find Maddenley Way Pond site, still owned by the parish council, filled in about 1940, and now occupied by two weeping willows planted in 1949. On the right we have the site of disused brickworks, now owned by Mr. Nicholas Guppy, worldwide traveller and conservationist, who has modernised two houses on the estate and established a wonderful sanctuary for wildlife, birds, beasts and plants, in the 4 or 5 acres of water-filled clay pits and surrounding land. The house occupied by Mr. Guppy, now called The Pond, was earlier the site of the Haddenham Gas Company, which operated in the parish from around 1870 to 1900. Next to Mr. Guppy's is another old brickyard, which was worked until 1932-33. Alongside the entrance to the old station was a public house called the Railway Tavern, now occupied as modern offices by a plastics packaging company, which also has a large part of the old station yard. The station house is now a private dwelling, and the station office buildings, with the platform and adjoining track and part of the yard, has been converted by the Cambridge Girl Guides Association into a camping centre. Passing over the station bridge, we have on the right the road to Gruntifen named Ely Way, and on the left there are remains of extensive brick clay pits which are being filled in by the County Council with household refuse. To the village centre to the Baptist Chapel, which is a splendid example of early 20th century nonconformist building. Commenced in 1904 and opened on the 12th of September 1905, it was built by Mr. Harry Feast, whose builder's yard was situated on the other side of the nearby village green. The opening ceremony was by Mrs. John Chivers of the Histon family of jam manufacturers, which had contributed generously to the cost. The spire on the southeast corner of the building is in memory of William Chivers. The memorial window in the west wall above the pulpit was given in memory of Mr. and Mrs. James Biddall, who were related by marriage to the Camps family and farmed land in Hillrow. The sundial, built into the south transept or organ chamber, was originally built into the large chimney block which served an ancient house and shop on this corner site, and it is claimed that it was a condition of sale that it should be preserved and placed in the new building. But how an ancient sundial with its Greek inscription arrived in Haddenham remains a mystery. Mr. Harry Feast, the builder, told a very interesting story relating to the stone steps which lead to the vestry door, where the incline from path to the door was very steep. These steps were not included in the specifications of the building, and the chapel trustees refused to pay the cost. The architect who had instructed Mr. Feast to provide the steps was forced to adopt drastic methods to enforce payment. He invited the trustees and deacons to meet him on the day before the opening ceremony, and also ordered men to attend with a horse and lorry. He then issued an ultimatum saying, "These stone steps are my steps, and I require them for another building. If you do not pay, they will be removed at once." The trustees and deacons, realizing that access was almost impossible without the stones, agreed to pay, and the stones remain to this day. Across the green we find the old Chequers public house, now nicely converted into offices for a removals firm, and then a modern light engineering works on the site previously occupied by Mr. Feast the builder. Adjoining is the old Baptist chapel, now used as a church hall, and adjoining that is a nonconformist burial ground, which is now under the control of the parish council. On the north of the green is a disused mill and offices, now converted to residential use, and next the so-called manor house, built about 1870 on the site of a medieval house called the Wren's Nest. We proceed to West End, and in Church Lane is found a redundant church hall, now converted to residential use, and nearby the burial ground, now rarely used but not yet closed, which officially is an extension of the churchyard. Near the junction of Church Lane and West End, there was a public house called the Globe, but known as the Sand Hole. In the field at the back of the public house is a very large pit, from which sand and ballast were extracted to build the railway from Haddenham to Sutton. A temporary light railway was laid from this pit to the Sutton line, and because of the fall in the land from the pit to Haddenham station, No energy except braking was required to transport the sand. Empty wagons were returned uphill by horse transport. An aerial photograph taken over 100 years after this track was used reveals the course taken and is shown clearly as a line leaving the sand hole via College Farm across the corner of the Council House Gardens to the old station. Proceeding westward to the junction of Common Rights Way, usually called Dunway, we find an infilled pond site owned by the parish council and now planted with trees. The writer remembers this pond when it was used by geese reared by Mr. Fred Allsup, who owned the adjoining garden. It was a daily occurrence for 10 or more geese to hold up the traffic on the road to Erith or St. Ives, strangely with few casualties. Proceeding towards Hillrow, we find a group of houses called Stonecroft Terrace. Originally, there were 8 houses, but this number has been reduced by amalgamation. According to George Green, a reliable source of information, who lived in the terrace when a schoolboy, 40 children from these 8 houses attended the local schools. On the left of West End, we have Newtown Road, a typical example of post-1918 rural district council planning. From this point onwards to the Fen, we find good examples of 18th and 19th century farmhouses. A modern milk marketing board collection centre has been established. This modern industrial yard was established by Mr. Sidney Wolstenholmes, who commenced the collection of milk from local farms with a small lorry about 1930. Proceeding along Hillrow, we find on the left a small derelict building which was used for a period up to the 1930s as the Hillrow Mission Hall. It belonged to the local parish church and in its early days was used for a Sunday school, weeknight services and social events. It continued in use as a small social centre until around 1950, when, because of its condition, it was closed and restored to the owner of the surrounding field. Adjoining the Mission Hall, being part of the same field, was a pond which was owned by the parish council under the enclosure award. The pond has been filled and was sold by the council to Mr. George Amory, the owner of the field from which the pond was taken. This pond and the property opposite was the scene of an extraordinary event in 1921. The Great Ouse River Board had assessed thousands of acres of farmland for drainage tax, and hundreds of farmers refused to pay this new levy. Mr. W. Peacock, who lived opposite the pond and farmed land in Hillrow Fen, objected to payment, and after the statutory notices had been served, the river board decided to distrain on a haystack in the nearby farmyard. Notices were posted in the district, intimating that the stack would be sold at 11 a.m. on Monday. Over the weekend, a council of war was called. A small corn stack was threshed out, and the straw was stacked around and over the haystack so that it could not be seen. Ammunition in the form of rotten eggs was obtained. Several of the farmers' wives incubated thousands of eggs, and the infertile reject eggs, some having been in a refuse pit for 2 years, were collected and carefully concealed near the farmyard. The Haddenham and Hillrow Irregulars, having armed themselves, waited for the enemy to appear. At 10 a.m. an auctioneer from Cambridge named Love arrived in a motor car, escorted by 2 burly assistants and Police Constable Breeze, the local policeman. After some time, the haystack was located and the auctioneer prepared for action. Mr. Walter Player and Mr. Lewis Edwards, 2 local farmers, warned the auctioneer that he was trespassing, as the haystack was on property owned by Mrs. Olive Peacock, the wife of the debtor. The auctioneer deferred immediate action and tramped to the telephone office in Haddenham to contact the clerk to the drainage board. Returning to Hill Row, he announced that he would conduct the sale on the King's Highway. No sooner had he commenced his work, he was hit in his ear hole, Mr. George Amory's description with necessary deletions, with a 2-year-old egg, the contents of the missile running down his neck, and a barrage of rotten eggs were hurled at the auctioneer and his assistants. So terrible was the smell that several of the attackers succumbed to the fumes. Supporters of the irregulars encouraged them by singing Rule Britannia and the National Anthem. The auctioneer attempted to carry on with the sale, but his voice was completely covered by shouts from irate supporters of the farmer. Another subtle movement by the irregulars was deployed. The crowd commenced an encircling movement, and the auctioneer, bailiff and assistants were slowly but surely forced into the muddy margin of the parish pond. At this stage, Police Constable Breeze made his presence felt. There is no doubt he handled the situation with tact and courage. Using his authority, he stopped the encircling movement and prevented a mud bath. It is thought the stack was sold privately. Auctioneer and assistants tried to obtain a wash and brush up before entering their car, but were unsuccessful and were obliged to return to Cambridge in a very sorry condition. The story of the Hill Row Rebellion is still related with various embellishments. The event was reported in the Ely Standard, to which the writer readily acknowledges his indebtedness for the basic facts of this story. The story, as told by the inimitable George Amory, an eyewitness of the event, ought to be recorded for posterity. Almost opposite the Mission House, the Mission Hall, is Porch House, without doubt the oldest house in the parish. It was almost certainly built by the Dutch drainage engineers who lived in the area to supervise the drainage of the fens. An inscribed stone above the front porch bears the date 1657. Within 200 yards on the right is a unique group of 4 terraced houses known as Union Yard. These too show Dutch influence in their construction and were probably built for the Dutch labourers engaged in local drainage work. The Bedford Rivers, constructed around 1650, are only about 3 miles away, and Porch House and Union Yard would be a fairly safe retreat from the irate fenmen who were opposed to the drainage of the fen because they felt it would deprive them of their fish and wildfowl. From this point, the road drops gradually towards the fen, but to the north, the highland known as North Hill gives one of the best views in the county of the surrounding fen. Without doubt, it was used in troublesome times as a sentry point or lookout, for near its highest point, a good specimen of a Cromwellian sword was uncovered by the plough. Thank you. We must return to the central crossroads and continue our survey along High Street. A narrow footpath on the left, about 50 yards from the corner, is called Bull Lane, from the Bull Inn which stood nearby. On the right is the Methodist Chapel, with its typical 19th century frontage. Mr. Harry Feast, who helped in building the chapel, recounted several interesting facts that should be recorded. The inscribed stone bearing the name Wesleyan was originally in the front of the first chapel on this site, which was built in 1843. A discussion arose about the use of a stone engraved 1843, which could not nicely be placed in the front of an 1891 building, and yet it was too nice a relic to be discarded. So Mr. Feast built it into the back wall of the chapel, where it is to this day. Another small brick, incised with the date 1843, is built into the north wall of the chapel, above and to the right of the side door. The large foundation stone on the northeast corner was laid by a Mr. Samuel Manby of Kettering, who was either a representative or director of a firm of builders' merchants who supplied most of the building materials for the chapel. The chestnut tree in the yard at the back of the chapel was planted by Mr. Sidney Feast when part of the premises were let to his father, Mr. Harry Feast, for a garden. At that time, the property extended for about 50 yards beyond the present boundary, and Mr. Feast had a small shelter or summer house in the shade of this tree. Most of the garden was sold to Mr. H.T. Setchell to allow an extension to his adjoining yard. A new boundary wall was erected, leaving the tree in the chapel yard. The next property to the chapel was used for over 100 years as a bakery, but when the business outgrew the premises, the present owners purchased the adjoining property, which was formerly the Rose and Crown Public House with a large garden, converted the buildings into a dwelling house and shop, and in the garden at the back erected a modern bakery, which is probably the best in the district. At the bottom of the Rose and Crown garden and extending along for approximately 80 yards is a long, narrow pit or depression, which according to Mr. Harry Feast was the manor fish pond. This long pond served as a watering place for the large pasture field owned by the manor. And when this property was sold in 1916, it was allotted to the two adjoining sections of the field, which were sold in 4 or 5 parts. The pond was filled in about 1875 with the soil taken from the churchyard when the parish church was restored. We must remember that Mr. Harry Feast was born in 1864 and he had a remarkable retentive memory. He recounted details relating to the churchyard which must be recorded. It was the continual burying of bodies in the confined space of the churchyard that had caused the ground level around the church to rise so much that this high level was the chief cause of the dampness that caused weakness in the walls of the church. At the restoration, the architects and surveyors decreed that the level of the churchyard must be lowered by several feet. The Feast family were dissenters and refused to allow a family grave to be touched, and so the levellers were obliged to dig around this grave and leave it above the new level of the churchyard. Mr. Feast stated the surface was lowered by 4 to 5 feet. The enormous amount of spoil from the churchyard was deposited into the now redundant manor or rectory fish pond. And Mr. Feast remembered that he and his young friends often found human bones which had been overlooked by the carters. All bones that were discovered in the levelling were of course reburied and memorials were replaced. It is interesting to note that reference to a fish pond was made in the wills of William de Nyon and Falk Gray, both of whom left 60 young pickerels from the fish ponds to beneficiaries. On the left of High Street, in the area now occupied by the entrance to Camping Close, there was originally a group of three 17th or 18th century cottages, a 17th century public house called the Bell, and a pair of 18th century houses with a carpenter's and wheelwright's yard. These were demolished when Camping Close was developed. The walnut tree, now a feature in the small area of grass adjoining High Street and Camping Close, was planted by Jack Cockle in his father's garden. This young man was awarded the Military Medal for bravery in the field in the 1939-45 war. He related how, when employed by Mr. E.J. Burton in Hillrow Fen, he found the young walnut tree in a potato field, with the nutshell attached, brought it home and planted it beside the garden path. When the site was cleared, the district council was persuaded to preserve the tree, and the Friends of Haddenham were given permission to place a seat around its base, which has proved a very acceptable feature in this development. On the right, next to Paradise Cottage, so called, it is said, because the builder enjoyed a period of contentment after his retirement from the builder's yard opposite, was a 17th century thatch cottage, in which Mr. John Burton and his son John S. Burton worked as basket makers. Mr. Burton owned an osier halt of several acres near the river in Haddenham Fen, and these were harvested, stored and stripped of bark in the yard at the back of the thatched house. The basket making shop door opened onto the street, and it was a place for gossip and exchange of village political news, for John Stanley Burton was secretary of the local Labour Party. In the opening adjoining the thatch cottage was a small tailor shop, in which the tailor sat on his bench, and orders from a new suit or overcoat to the repair of working clothes were executed. On the right we find the Farmyard Museum, which is dealt with later. Opposite the museum is a shop, probably 18th century, which bears on its front wall an insurance company identification disc, a rare survivor of the time when fire insurance was limited to property bearing a plate issued by the insurers. The junction of High Street with Linden End and Aldrich Road is marked on old maps a stone cross corner, and this is probably the original site of Ovin's memorial stone. Proceeding along Aldrich Road, we find on the right Berry Lane, a name associated with the ancient manor of Linden. The small clump of silver birch trees further along on the right occupy the site of a pond allotted under the enclosure award, which is still owned by the parish. Nearby, at the end of a short roadway, is Quaker's Close, the site of a 17th century Quaker burial ground mentioned earlier. On the left is the remains of the brick-towered windmill erected in 1803. To the right, on the site of a house named Herriwake, was formerly another brick-towered windmill. Photographs have survived showing an interesting picture taken from a site near the green, which shows the two windmills, complete with sails, as an outstanding feature on the Aldrich Road skyline. Next of interest on the right is a large red brick house, commonly called Covent Garden, from its fruit, or the poplars, from a row of poplars which were along the frontage of the property. This house is the last of the houses which was built of the soft red bricks which were made from clay, excavated and baked in a temporary kiln on the site. The house was built by the Burkett family around 1860. The writer was told an interesting story in 1932 by an old brickmaker from Doddington named Gabriel Woodbine, a member of a family which owned a small brick factory in that parish. He recalled that as a young man he travelled to Haddenham with his father, helped with others to build a small kiln, dig the clay, make and bake the red bricks, which were in turn used as available by Mr. Birkett to build the house. The foundations of the house are constructed of a harder brick of the type produced from the pits near the old station. Gabriel told how he and his father returned to Doddington on Saturday evenings, returning on Monday with clean laundry and a supply of food, and lived during the week in a shed on the site. The pit from which this material was dug can still be identified on the slope of the adjoining field. Also on this property there was an interesting corn mill which was erected by William and Arthur Birkett in 1890. The maker and inventor of the mill was Mr. Gofford Kidd, who had a workshop in the yard of the Hare and Hounds in the High Street. According to the Wisbech Standard, Mr. Kidd had erected upwards of 20 similar mills in different parts of the country. The Birkett brothers made a steam engine to provide driving power if the weather was quiet and calm, and had an advantage over the two large windmills which were nearby. This mill was constructed on iron girders, for in the Wisbech Standard dated the 3rd of December 1897, we read the sad story of its destruction in a severe gale. In a report of the extensive damage caused by this gale, the mill is described described as the High Iron Eiffel Tower Mill of Mr. Birkett's. So we can from this description assume what the design was like. Mr. Wilfred Markwell, a grandson of Mr. Arthur Birkett, remembers playing around the ruin of the mill when he was a child. There is no doubt that other interesting features have been overlooked, but the foregoing facts hold an interest which must surely be recorded and preserved. In 1969, the garden of 50 High Street was ploughed over to enable Michael and Lorna Delanoy to plant a new orchard and garden in keeping with the new house which they had erected for their family. In the course of this operation, small pieces of pottery, willow-type pattern, and clay pipe fragments, animal teeth and bones came to the surface, and Craig, then aged 4 years, made a collection of bits and pieces, neatly arranged on trays, and called it his museum, and announced to his friends and relations that it could be inspected on payment of a fee which would be given to help children who couldn't see or couldn't walk. From this small beginning, a remarkable museum has developed, now called the Farmland Museum. Craig's first supporters offered him exhibits such as Victorian bric-a-brac, old coins, clay pipes, real Roman pottery sherds, until Craig's bedroom became overcrowded. A shed in the garden was cleared, and exhibits arranged on an old table, and the museum was painted on the door. Friends continued to bring more and more exhibits, farm implements, rural antiquities, and now thousands of exhibits, too numerous to mention. A brief tour of the premises will give the reader a perhaps hazy picture of how a child's fancy has developed. On the small frontage adjoining the High Street are exhibited a few items to attract the attention of the passerby: a horse-drawn snowplough, an early reversible farm plough, and a manually operated chaff cutter. Proceeding down the garden path, which is flanked by beehives, which are empty, and various farmyard equipment, we find a long lean-to shed which contains a surprising assortment of seashells, stuffed birds, collections of birds' eggs, birds' nests, fossils from local clay and gravel pits, querns, Stone Age implements, Roman tiles, and pottery. Further down the garden path, there is on the left a sizable, soundly constructed bandstand, which is used on open days by local bands, handbell ringing teams, Morris dancers and the local ballet school. Nearby is a large brick-built building which contains collections of Victoriana, local bricks, memorials retrieved from the local school when it was closed, a door from Ely Jail, a large collection of exhibits associated with the 1914-18 and the 1939-46 wars. One end of this building is so arranged into separate sections which contain specialised exhibits of a Victorian scullery and washhouse, an old-fashioned kitchen with open hearth, a small sitting room with early radio, open fireplace, family Bible, ear trumpets and newspapers and magazines, one recording the general strike of 1926. Adjoining the sitting room is a child's nursery containing an iron frame cot, bed bricks, hot water bottles, feeding bottles, bed bonnets and nightdresses. Exhibited on the north wall is a notice which announced the opening of the Ely, Haddenham and Sutton Railway in 1866 and the certificate of the marriage of Mr. Ernest Tebbutt, a local shopkeeper, to his bride, a young North Country Quakeress. Also in this building is a collection of lamps and lanterns, clay pipes and two frightening examples of 18th or 19th century man traps. On the outer wall is preserved a good example of a 19th century firehook found in a barn in the village. The next building down the path contains a blacksmith and wheelwright shop with its forge, lathes, anvil and all the tools of the 19th century. Built across the west end of the garden is an open shed which contains an old corn reaper, a self-binder, old seed drills, mangle cutters, many barn implements and a large oil-filled stationary engine. On the south side of the open shed is a building which contains collections of gin traps, dyking and drainage tools, basket and hurdle makers' tools, corn dollies, wine jars, cooper's tools, horses, a shire horse's harness, a typical village cobbler's bench and many other bygones. On the north corner we find a building which contains equipment from 19th century dairies, a collection of horse bits, milk separators, balling irons, teeth files, peat beckets and many other exhibits associated with cow sheds and stables of the 19th century. Along the north boundary of the garden is a remarkable collection of horse-drawn implements, hay rakes, hay cutters, beet and potato harvesters, harrows, ploughs, cultivators and horse hoes. There is a good collection of stationary engines, petrol-driven, which on open days are operated by a band of devotees. The museum has attracted thousands of visitors, and several thousands of pounds have been donated to children's charities.